Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Digitally Diverse, where we do a deep dive into the careers and journeys of our Australian design leaders. So today we have the honour of having the wonderful Mikey Ford join us, who is a creative technologist. Thank you so much for joining us, Mikey.
No, it's been, great. I've been looking forward to having a chat about this. So it's been, really looking forward to it.
Wonderful. And I also know for the people who are watching us visually, would you also like to introduce who is joining you?
Yeah, so we've got this is George. He is a massive sook and he just wants to lie next to me while I do this. So if you see a little black puffy hair pop up, that's George. So.
Yeah. Oh, bless him. He's so cute. Cool. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining us. Yeah. but I would love to kind of hear a little bit more about your career to date. Can you give us a brief overview of, for some listeners who don't know who you are?
Yeah, sure. So, you kind of mentioned creative technology, which is a bit of a nebulous role, which it sort of comes out almost out of necessity sometimes that, technology is moving so quickly and so rapidly that it's actually very difficult to sort of grasp what's going on. When I was started, web was the big thing, and it almost seems I'm kind of dating myself a little bit there, sort of saying that the internet was the big disruptor. But, it's just every couple of years there's something new. So that's kind of been the defining part of my role. I started as a developer and started then moved on to project management where I was managing teams of developers and designers. And just at every point in my career, it was always, technology was changing the way we do things. And so I tried to sort of stay ahead of that in my studies and the roles that I took. So I think, it's kind of a catch-all type, role description to say that I'm, actively involved in how do we creatively apply technology to solve, user problems, business problems, what is the long-term strategy? So it's just quite a generalist role. And I've also studied, did a master's in interaction design and electronic arts at Sydney Architectural Faculty. So, my stuff has been sort of very grounded in UX, but also in the sort of humanities and the art space as well to sort of bring those two things together to create interesting experiences. So, very long-winded answer, but that's kind of what's brought me to where I am today.
Yeah, nice. And it sounds like, what you're up to it encompasses so many different forms of design and a lot of different functions as well. So, I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you're up to at the moment. Can you fill us in where you're at right now?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting, when we first sort of organized to have this chat, you sort of called me on the day where my previous role had been made redundant. So it was kind of
interesting timing.
It's a bit of a double-edged sword where it was, I was obviously it's always you try not to take it personally, but you invested so much of who you are into these roles and whom and so much into it for them to sort of make a very cold calculated business decision about those things. It does sort of you can't help but be hurt a little bit by that. But I think that the flip side of that, once I sort of took some time to have a break and have a relax, it's just been amazing, in a weird way. Like, the silver lining of that is that it's kind of opened me up to be available for things that I probably wouldn't have been looking for or conversations that I wouldn't have had the time to pursue working that 9-to-5. So right now I'm sort of working with a pre-seed startup about, working in the mental health space, which is just incredible, something I'm quite passionate about. Talking to companies about, building permanent installations, interactive installations and art installations to as part of, just ongoing experiences in buildings around the world. So I think, whilst the redundancy was pretty rough, I've sort of come out of it where I'm seeing a lot of opportunities and working on things that I just would never have imagined that I would have if I was still doing that 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I remember that conversation. You picked up the phone and be like, "Yeah, it's really interesting that you called me today because this has just happened." And both of us were like, "Oh, wow! Like this is not probably not what we both expected." But
yeah,
I mean, it is happening a lot right now. And I feel like one of the main reasons why I still wanted to have a chat with you on the podcast is just to showcase that people who are also going through this situation are not alone. Like a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's the market at the moment, and it can be scary, but at the same time, it's really fantastic to hear that you're, you know, seeing so many other different kinds of opportunities that are open to you now.
Yeah, and look, and I think that's kind of it, isn't it? You do feel very alone, and you do feel like, oh, I've messed up, or there's something, you know, I'm doing something wrong. My wife was amazing. She, when it happened, she sent me these pictures of all of the times that I've been really happy. You know, the projects that I was working on, where, you know, it's me like wearing virtual reality glasses at the Australian Open, doing these kind of crazy creative tech projects. And it's like, these were the things that you know you're really happy in. You sort of got lost that a little bit working the 9 to 5. And so, yeah, I know it does feel quite isolating, but I just started talking to people and started getting back to what I knew I loved. And I think that in that there was like a re-energizing and using this redundancy money as a way to, yeah, just to sort of take time and find out, well, what is it that I really want to be doing for the next, you know, 20, 30 years before I have to retire, you know? Do I really want to be writing Jira tickets or do I want to be, you know, messing around with virtual reality and augmented reality? You know, what's the path that I want to take? So, so I've tried to be, you know, get out there and talk to people about how I feel honestly as well, which is good. And I find that, you know, people in the industry are really open to that. You know, it does seem quite daunting just to be like, hey, you're a complete stranger. Can I just have a chat to you about what's going on? But I think most people are really open to just having a conversation. I think people like that. And, you know, even you asked me to be on the podcast. I was like, oh, really? Massive imposter syndrome. But I was really, you know, I really liked the opportunity to just talk. And if that helps other people, again, that's a bonus. So I think that's probably the big thing I've learned out of all this is it does feel isolating, but, you know, just getting out there and talking to people, there's just so much going on and there's so much opportunity that you don't see when your head's down working at your desk, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right, like taking advantage of your network and knowing that the vast majority of people will help if they can. You know, it is really daunting to get out and ask, you know, for 5 minutes of your time. I totally get that. I get it when I reach out to people to come on the podcast. I'm like, who would want to talk to little old me? But at the same time, it's like if you got to shoot your shot and not. Yeah. What I've found is like a solid 9 out of 10 times, people will get back to you and are like really enthusiastic. So yeah, that's great to hear that that's been your experience as well.
Yeah, it's been really encouraging. And I always sort of think, you know, if someone did this to me, what would I do? And that's how I kind of gauge the reactions of other people. You kind of give them, you know, what is the most generous thing that you could give to those people about, you know, maybe they're just too busy, maybe they saw it and forgot, you know, so trying to be positive about how my intention is received, as well as, you know, trying to give something back as well to other people that are reaching out.
Definitely. Well, I'd love to hear a little bit about, obviously at the moment it's kind of hard probably to predict what the next 12 months looks like for you.
Yeah.
But do you have any semi plans or what's next for you, do you think?
Well, you know, I think the thing that, as a creative technologist or someone who is, you know, thinking strategically about how technology is going to change the way that we do business and the way that we interact and those kind of things. I think everyone, you know, is talking very much about sort of AI and machine learning and, you know, your ChatGPT and things like that. And so for me, that's very interesting about changing, I guess, the dynamic of work and even the dynamic of design. Mm-hmm. So I've been actually spending a lot of time with grandparents, weirdly. You know, you kind of meet the grandparents and you go to dance classes and you're spending time with the grandparents. And one of these guys, his name's Trevor, he's an old veteran of the industry. You know, he was telling me about how he used to cut films and stick them together and things like that. Cool. And so I showed him, I said, oh, just give me a prompt. He said, all right, I want to see a fire in New York City in Central Park and a man running away from the fire. And I just typed that into Midjourney and it just completely broke his brain. So it was really interesting to sort of have that conversation with someone who's come from this massively sort of analog, it would take him 2 to 3 months to create one image to use as a poster versus, I guess, me just typing that in, image appears, it shows up on social for 15 seconds and then just flicks past, and that's kind of the engagement it has. And so I think, you know, for the what I'm kind of interested in is one, sort of how do we use that as a tool for something meaningful, and you know, so we're kind of creating things that are bespoke to an individual, but it's also meaningful and has value. It's not just, you know, it's almost spamming your eyeballs with all this kind of stuff. So I think that's, you know, when you sort of talk about what's the next 12 months, it's kind of exploring those ideas, and then how do you translate that into, you know, what we do in terms of product, what we do in terms of creating features and design, and maybe how that becomes a tool for what people are doing in the future. But then also, I think the thing that I'm always very interested in, and how does that kind of affect us as individuals? How does it make us better? You know, how do we sort of have those meaningful interactions and things like that in terms of the way that we go forward? So that's going to be a really interesting thing, not only from a user or a consumer point of view, but also how that's going to really impact business. You know, we sort of look at news that is like, yeah, we're just going to use AI because we can't afford to compete unless we use AI and those kinds of things. And so I think the next 12 months is, I guess, how do I inject myself into that in a more meaningful way? And whether that is purely creative, you know, working, like I said, with big installations and art installations and things like that, where there's opportunities for that, or, you know, focusing where I was previously in startup product, and how do we utilize these tools to reimagine people's experiences with content, how they consume and engage and interact with content in new meaningful ways. And so, yeah, I guess it's a bit of a crossroads now. And and whilst I think there's kind of benefits to both, but I keep, when I sort of look at, you know, those big interactive art installations, that's kind of where my heart sort of sits, I think, a little bit. So yeah. I think maybe that's where I'm going to try and pursue the next couple of months until the money runs out, maybe, but we'll see what happens.
If it's kind of like where your heart is lying and, you know, it still gives you the butterfly feeling, then you know, you'd be silly not to kind of pursue that and just see where it takes you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit more about, like, how you started out in technology. What kind of, like, higher education did you partake in? And is there any advice that you would give to people potentially looking into doing something in the tech industry?
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said, I kind of dated myself a little bit when I was like, the internet came out and that was amazing. But I think it goes all the way back to when I was probably like 4 or 5, I think. I was playing with this ancient games console. You know, it was just like black and white on a screen. And I was just completely like, this is magic, you know, like this is from the future kind of stuff. And and so ever since then, I've always been sort of fascinated with technology. And I always knew that I was going to do something with computers. I just never really knew what it was. Always like, yeah, I'm going to make computer games. That, you know, it's a very, very childish view of the things. But I always knew I was going to do something with technology. So I did a degree in IT, and I was writing Java on a Unix terminal, and it was just soul crushing. But then, like I said, that was kind of the beginning of the web, and I started to play around with, you know, web design, like very, very archaic web design, you know, early days of Photoshop, early days of Flash, ActionScript. So it was kind of, you know, using this technology as a creative canvas, and that's kind of what got me interested in it, and that's kind of always what I pursued. And like I said, I did the master's in interaction design electronic arts, which is about just, you know, continuing to improve my skills and my knowledge as the industry progressed and technology changed, all those kinds of things. So I think that would be one thing that I would say to young people, is that the rate at which things changes, and I guess the rate at which things are diversifying now, is crazy, you know. So it's kind of being open to change and open to learn, and just be to continually kind of checking in and saying, you know, am I progressing? Am I learning more skills? Or just having those fundamental foundational skills. So like, as an example, I kind of understand the principles of object-oriented programming and scripting languages versus I know how to code in JavaScript or I know how to use React. So it's kind of having those foundational skills that are transferable. I guess the ability to critically and communicate are always things that when I've done a few chats with grads and things like that about, you know, how do I get a job? You know, they're all sort of freaked out, wide-eyed about how do I get a job? You know, do I need to learn this? Do I need to learn this? And I kind of always said to them is that what I'm looking for is your ability to think critically about how to solve a problem, mm-hmm. and have a structured approach. So when you do something, you can kind of go, right, I approached it because I could see this user need, or I could see this behavior, or there was some foundational thing rather than just, I learned how to use Photoshop. And I think that for me, because you can teach tools, you know, I watched a YouTube video on the weekend to learn about normalizing databases, which I don't know why, but it just seemed interesting. But mm-hmm. I think there's so many resources and there's so many things available now that to learn a tool, I don't think is as critical as the ability to communicate and unpack and structure and plan what you are doing and why you think this is the solution that we should be implementing, mm-hmm. whether that be design, whether that be tech, whether that be, you know, we should do this in VR or we should do this as a mobile app. So I think that's probably the main thing that I've learned in my long time doing this is that, yeah, it is kind of that, I wouldn't say they're soft skills, but it's problem solving and communication will get you way, way further, I think, than, you know, knowing the ins and outs of a single language or the ins and outs of Figma.
Yeah. That's actually something that comes up quite a lot, you know, in my day-to-day work as a recruiter. It's very easy sometimes to forget that design, especially when you're face-to-face with a lot of users. Communication and connection, that is a skill that, you know, is really, really useful when you're in a creative industry. Like, you need to create buy-in, you need to create that connection with a lot of different people to do your job. Just like, and it's kind of ironic that technology has allowed technical skills to be quite easy to come by. Like, you can just hop on YouTube and learn how to do Figma if you really wanted to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not as much resources around those like people skills and those critical thinking skills. So
critical thinking, that's the word I was looking for in that whole rant. Critical thinking, unpacking a problem, mm-hmm.
And so that it's kind of ironic how it's all kind of almost come full circle.
And I think one of the things that I in my break from working is I've learned to be okay with being a generalist. Mm-hmm. Where I was kind of hard on myself that, you know, maybe if I just focus solely on, you know, learning Flutter or learning React, that I'd be way more employable and be way more, you know, I could just kind of slot in and it would be easy for people to hire me. But then I realized that people aren't hiring me because I can easily slot into a box to do a functional job. They're coming to me because I have that broad view of mm-hmm. tech, of business, of product, of design and even sort of user experience to sort of have a longer term view of what's going on. And it's kind of okay to let your curiosity lead you a little bit as well and not be too hard on yourself about, I just need to focus very much on this. Because again, like I said, those kind of skills, the critical thinking, you know, understanding people, understanding how to communicate, they transfer and you can learn the tools. Yeah. It's not a death knell to your career because you didn't learn Java 17 years ago when it was really hot or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you can definitely bounce back. And yeah, I think there is a lot of value in being a generalist, especially now where, you know, there's so many smaller businesses, especially in Australia.
Yes.
I find as a recruiter anyway, that comparing the design market here in Australia to what it was in the UK, we love generalists, and to specialize, especially early in your career, is sometimes I don't tend to advise that.
Yep.
So just like opening yourself up to all the different opportunities is really, really beneficial, I think. And it just allows you to soak up so much more knowledge.
My career has been driven by curiosity and I think just being curious about things and curious about why things worked, why things didn't work. Mm-hmm. It is also really valuable. You know, I think there is I put a lot of credibility in people that are curious people who don't take things at face value and they question why and could this be better or why did that work? You know, they're just so, again, I think that's probably another thing that I don't know if you can teach curiosity. I don't know. I think I've got a book here about how to be curious. So I think maybe you can teach curiosity, but maybe that just that not being satisfied and question and, mm-hmm. could this be better or why are we doing this? Do you know what? I think Elon Musk calls it first principle thinking, you know, sort of just because we've decided that this is the way it is, like, why don't we go all the way back to the start and question, you know, the foundational first principles of things, and is there a better way, or can we kind of unpack that in a different way?
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular like workplace or a memory that you have of a team or a culture that really fostered that sense of curiosity for you? Because I feel like sometimes people can feel quite intimidated to be always asking why.
You're right. And to a certain extent, there was just a naiveness to me. You know, I'd come from working as a project manager, which is very structured and timelines, mm-hmm. you know, budgets, that kind of thing, to moving into a creative role with a bunch of creative people. And so I actually had no idea. Mm-hmm. And so the way that I was doing things was very unconventional, but, you know, they were very excited by the work that I was doing, and so they were open to that. So this was when I was working AKQA. They were a smaller company at the time called DT, but they were acquired later on by AKQA. So I think that was probably when I was most, you know, evolving creatively, I think, during that period. Mm-hmm. And it really was just the willingness for other people to go, yep, let's do it. And I remember I pitched this idea to simulate serves from the center court at the Australian Open within VR, so you could then try and hit it with a tennis racket and see what it's like to be a professional tennis player. And I remember pitching the idea and then just being silence, and everyone's like, okay, yep, best practices about designing in VR. And it's like, I don't know, no one's ever done this before, like, this is literally the test kit from Oculus, no one's ever done VR designs or anything like that, we're just making it up. And he's like, okay, cool, yep, let's do it. So, and so I think, you know, and it was wild. Like, I was ordering, you know, tens of thousands of dollars worth of VR equipment from the US, just praying that they make it on time and all these kinds of things. And I think there was just, and I think if I had known what I know now, I wouldn't have pitched the idea. It would have just been, that just all seems too hard, that all seems too tough. So I think a little bit of childishness and being naive was really helpful in terms of progressing. And I think just being open to being vulnerable, I think there needs to be a lot of sort of psychological safety in design and product teams for people just to go, I don't know, or I don't know how this is going to work. Let's work mm-hmm. together and see if we can come up with a solution, versus it being, I need to have everything buttoned down and solved and everything before it becomes presented to everyone else. And I'm still friends with these people today. You know, I'm catching up with my design director next week, you know, so we're in the trenches, and we formed a lot of friendships and like long-term relationships in the trenches doing mm-hmm. this work, because it was hard, but it was also super rewarding. And I think, you know, my boss at the time, he gave me a lot of creative freedom without a lot of financial restraint, because he saw the potential of, I call it, you know, I was like the chocolate bar at the shopping checkout aisle, you know, like they're making their money off the big web builds, all those kinds of very fundamental things that they were doing, but they saw an opportunity to, you know, do something different and use that as a way to bring in new business and kind of differentiate themselves in market in terms of how they're using technology. So I also had a lot of freedom in that space that I wasn't, you know, having to be billable every single hour, but the work that I was doing was actually useful in kind of having different conversations with their clients about what we can do and our capabilities. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of, it's like, hey, go be creative. It is not realistic, but here is the space in the environment for you to be creative and think differently and explore these new things. I think a lot came out of that, and mm-hmm. you know, a lot of that work is still sort of talked about today amongst the people we worked with.
Yeah, nice. It sounds to me like the way that you felt supported was not necessarily the response of, no, we can't do that because of A, B, and C, but we don't know, but let's find out, and giving you the tools to like just go for it. And then, that's awesome.
And I think, you know, in terms of what I learned, how people do improv, like improv, mm-hmm. you know, acting is like, it's yes and, it's never no but, it's yes and. And I think that kind of culture of everyone was excited. So it was like, yes, and we could do this, and we could do this. And that kind of helped reframe my naive ideas or my naive approach to things, and it kind of helped shape it into something that everyone could grab onto and move forward. And yeah, I think that was really helpful.
Yeah, definitely. So, Mikey, is there anything that you like to do to, you know, keep up your motivation and your productivity, or any like self-care rituals that you like to partake in?
Yeah, it's always, you know, you wish there was more, or you wish you were better at them. But I have a six-year-old daughter who I love more than anything in the world. So in a weird way, you know, if I didn't have her keeping me in a structure, I think this time in my life would be a lot different. It was very funny. I kind of had a little chat with her when I found out I'd been made redundant. I said, oh, Ophelia, look, my job's finished, so I don't have a job now, so I need to try and find a new one. She's like, oh, you don't have a job? Oh, okay, great. Yep, now you can just spend more time playing with me. And I was like, what an amazing reframe of something that was, you know, just a really, yeah, it was, and it was, you know, I was like, great, amazing. I'm just going to spend time with you. And so when we sort of talk about, you know, my personal, you know, productivity or routine, it's sort of, you know, making time to spend with her and kind of focusing on that. And, you know, she's at an age where she still thinks I'm amazing, and I know she's going to become a teenager and just be like, oh, Dad, you're so embarrassing. But
take advantage of this while it
lasts.
Yeah,
so I'm just trying to take advantage of that now. And again, spending time with my wife and spending time with my daughter. And so that's kind of really just one thing that I have tried to reframe, because, you know, when you're doing the 9 to 5, you do end up, you get up, get everyone ready, and then you rush to work, and then you get home and you're tired and you make dinner and then put everyone to bed. You know, so that's one thing that I want to hold on to when I get back into more full-time work is some of these, just, you know, even just like taking time to walk the dog, I think is also really important. Just get out in nature and walk around. So I guess I don't, you know, have any journaling or meditation or anything like that, but I think it's just about, again, you know, resetting and reframing what is important and making sure that you have the time and the space to use that to recharge you and re-energize you before you know, diving into work. And
whatever is like meaningful for you, however you find those like little moments to rest. And for some people, that's like going on a 30-mile jog, and for other people, reading a good book.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, I think however it shows up for you, is it's great that, you know, Ophelia was able to like reshape how you were looking at your situation. And that just speaks to like a kid's intelligence, right? Like, oh, okay, your time is free. Now we can do fun stuff.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, it's also not being hard on myself that I'm not being more productive. I think there's almost like a plague of productivity.
Yeah.
Where you always have to be efficient and delivering and all this kind of thing, where I actually just, in, you know, just getting a coffee in the morning and sitting in the sun, like there's just something so incredible about that. That yeah, I think it's just really sort of helped me reshape and reframe what is important, and I think, and what energizes me, and what I want to pursue versus this kind of external expectation that, you know, that hustle grind culture or whatever that kind of, you know, defines this is what you should be doing by the time you're age 25 or you're failing, you know. So
yeah, it's just not realistic anymore. Like,
no.
Yeah, I totally agree. That hustle culture just makes me cringe sometimes. I'm like,
ugh. Yeah, just like I get up and I have an ice bath at 4 a.m. and yeah, I'm not doing any of that.
Hell no, not for me. And so, Mikey, I know that we chatted a little bit about, you know, the current situation and how that's been challenging for you and how you've gotten through that. But I'm curious to hear if you have any other speed bumps that you faced throughout your career, and how have they shaped where you're at the moment?
I think one of the big challenges that I've always had is being overly self-critical. And, you know, when you sort of reflect back on, you know, being in situations where things weren't defined well, or, you know, roles weren't defined well, or even briefs weren't defined well, as really poor communication, I would often internalize that dysfunction as failure on my behalf. Like, I should have known that's I should have read that person's mind, or I should have, you know, I should have known that was going to happen. And, or, you know, when something doesn't go well, regardless of my contribution, or it was like a group contribution, or it was a business-wide contribution, I would think that it was my fault that it wasn't a success. Or, and even when things were a success, I'd still think that I could have done this better. I could have, you know, so for me, I started to rather than internalize that conversation and say, you should have known, you should have done this, sort of overanalyzing and overthinking it, I started to be, I guess, more open in my conversation and more open in my communication with people, sort of saying, hey, I'm feeling this way. This feels, you know, or saying, this is what I'm going to do. Do you have any feedback before I progress? Mm-hmm. You know, so starting to change that conversation from internalizing the dysfunction, internalizing that and taking that as failure, but more, hey, this is what's happening. Is this the way you feel? Oh, okay, cool. I feel like that too. How can we work together to solve that problem? And I think that was probably the biggest thing I've learned. And I carried that for years and years and years. It took me a really long time to identify that and kind of try and find ways to manage that a bit differently. But the more mm-hmm. I started to talk to other people about, this doesn't feel right. This feels like I'm confused. This feels ambiguous. You know, what is the direction of this? The more other people are like, yeah, I feel that way too. Mm-hmm. Let's work together and try and find a solution and try to, you know, socialize that solution or socialize what we've learned. And so, yeah, I think that was probably the biggest change, mindset change, I think. And overcoming that has overcome, you know, the thousands of probably self-imposed hurdles I kind of created for myself in my career, which, you know, if I could go back, I'd probably be like, it's okay. Like, it's not your fault. It's, you know, you just, this is the imperfectness of communication, you know, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, I think that's, you hit the nail on the head there. I feel like so many feelings of inadequacy and the imposter syndrome, it does come down a lot to just like lack of communication or communication not landing how the speaker wants it to land. And I think that's like some really great advice for I think anyone can take on if they're in a workplace is if there's absolutely no harm in asking a follow-up question and being like, are you sure? Or how does that, what's the point of this? What's the goal of this decision?
Yeah.
Just to get a bit more clarity.
You know, because there's a tendency to be like complaining and negative, like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. Or this is, you know, this doesn't, I don't know what to do here. Like, you're not being clear, you know, that, or you could be like, okay, so where are we going with this? Like, what is our objective? You know, like what, how, like empower me with knowledge or direction or strategy to go, you know, we need to hit this target. So, right, this is what I'm going to do to hit that target. Mm-hmm. Are you cool with that? Let's move forward. So you're right in that even in having that conversation, there's still a way to have that conversation where it's people are more receptive to that versus it being coming across as negative.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, so many light bulb moments during this show, honestly.
And just as a disclaimer, like, you know, exclamation point, terms and conditions may apply. Like, I didn't do this perfectly. Like, I still struggle with this on a daily basis. It's hard for me to be like, oh my God, this is all just so tough and I just don't want to do this anymore. But being like trying to live up to what I've just said everyone else should do. So that's my little disclaimer to throw in there as well.
All right, thank you for mentioning that because it is hard. And like a lot of the conversations that I have on the podcast are, you know, advice that comes from a place of learning.
Yeah.
And so, yes, you do have to, and sometimes you don't really understand a lesson until you are taught it the hard way. So it's all well and good to say all this, but it definitely does land a little bit easier if you have that context around it.
It's Instagram versus reality. Like my life on social media looks amazing, but you know, anyway.
Yes, totally get that. Yeah, thanks so much for being like super transparent and vulnerable with like the lessons that you've learned through those challenges as well, because you're right, it is really hard to be vulnerable and be super upfront with, you know, potentially some things that you have gone through in the past. But it's great to hear your learnings as well, because that's why this podcast is here, is like to help people who, you know, may not have to go through some of the icky bits that you have. And that's great. Thank you for that.
And that, I think that really is what motivates me, is like, if other people don't have to go through that, then I'm happy to be the vulnerable person in this particular, like when I saw, that's why I wanted to talk about the redundancy and just talk to you about some of the struggles I had, because it's terrible. You know, you don't want other people to go through that. So if they can learn from where I've been, then that'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And I mean, obviously now that you get more time to spend with Ophelia and and George, is there anything that takes up your spare time day to day?
Do you know what? I can just watch a movie from beginning to end.
Luxury.
Yeah, so I kind of had, you know, whenever I put a movie on, it'll take me probably three watches to get through a whole movie. So to be interrupted by someone getting out of bed or someone, you know, needing a water, or, you know, I can watch a movie or I can play some Xbox, you know. So just those kinds of things that I, again, like sort of going back to those simple things about, you know, just taking time to just have some time for yourself and just focus on things that you did. And so, you know, playing games, was a big thing for me. And I, since becoming a dad and getting married, you have less time. So I think those things are just going back to a few things that brought me joy. And, you know, just also just sort of getting out and going to galleries and those kinds of things, going to gigs and just taking in a bit of culture, which, yeah. So I think, again, also trying to find a job. So I try to do something for myself in the morning and then find a job in the afternoon. But so that's kind of, you know, what's been keeping me busy. And
Yeah, it just sounds like you're getting some well-needed rest.
Yeah, weirdly, after so many years of just grinding it out. But, yeah, it's it's been really amazing.
Yeah, that's great. And I love to ask people as well, do you have any, like, podcasts or books or any kind of content that you consume generally that, you know, really, like, it doesn't even have to be design or creative related. Yeah. Like, is there anything that you like to listen to?
So there is one podcast called The Junkies. So it's by Dave Hughes and Kitty Flanagan. So they just review junk food, and it's just so frivolous and silly. You know, they're like, which do you like better, Mars bars or Milky Way? I don't know if that's exactly what they did, but they might review all the different types of salt and vinegar chips to see who has the best salt and vinegar chip. And it's just, again, when I'm walking George is when I'm, that's kind of my podcast time. So,
yeah.
Because I used to run a soda review blog when I was a bit younger. So I think that kind of, I just love, you know, just trying crazy sodas or them trying crazy candies or chips and just reviewing it like it's a really sophisticated, you know, this should have three Michelin stars or something like that. From a, I guess, tech design point of view, 99% Invisible, it's been around for years and years and years. I'm sure other people have mentioned it. It's just so high quality and they always find such unique, interesting things to talk about. And I think that's kind of, you know, even just some of the things they talked about have shaped some of the ideas and concepts that I've kind of moved forward. And so, yeah, I think that's kind of it. Like I said, you know, I don't have a great deal of, certainly I don't have a great deal of time. It's more just the capacity and mental capacity to focus on things like that and take it in. So
yeah,
those are probably the two that I really enjoy and that I listen to most when I walk the dog. So yeah, I think that's pretty much for podcasts. In terms of books and things, I always sort of punish myself and always sort of read nonfiction design books, you know, like The Design of Everyday Things or, you know, sort of functional work related books, you know, brand UX research or Teresa Torres, what's her thing? Continuous improvement. That would be my big recommendation. That kind of changed my thinking about innovation and product as well. So that was given to me by my previous manager. And yeah, love that book. So unless it's sort of dystopian sci-fi, it's very functional design, practical, relating to work.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, I think there's either I find that you're actually a bit of a rarity. Usually when I ask that question, some people are either, you know, they can list 10, 15 podcasts that they listen to and it's like all design related and all really highbrow, or other people are complete opposite and they don't like to consume anything kind of like work related on their off hours. It seems like they're kind of in the middle there, which is interesting.
Again, it sort of goes to that, you know, to growing and always feeling like you're, because just different mindsets and different views and how they can influence you, I think, is important. So, but I think walking the dog is kind of chill out time for me. And so, yeah, I don't want to be too bombarded with best practices in go-to-market product design strategy or something like that. You know?
Yeah. It's not the time or place.
No.
Yeah. Well, I guess with that being said, is there any, like, have you had any mentors throughout your career or, like, have any business leaders that have been really influential on you?
This makes me sound like I'm a little lost puppy, but I think it's more that there's been leaders or managers that cared about me and they cared about my development and invested time into me.
Yeah.
So shout out to Sam Yee, who was my previous manager at Aura, and Jason Mazzarotto, who was my manager at DT, now AKQA. Like, so, and again, still friends of them, still talk to them on a regular basis because, I guess they weren't mentors, but I think it's always good to have a manager who can see externally your strengths and weaknesses and be invested in creating an environment and invested in helping you grow to be better and capitalize on those things that you're great, your strengths, but also helping, helping you to give you structure and training or things to sort of mitigate those weaknesses or things you need to develop. And I don't, I've never had like a formal mentor always sit down and talk about it, but I think those two really will be with me forever because they actively cared about my development versus, managing me and managing my productivity. I guess in terms of, there are people I like as designers and things like that, but in terms of, they're more just like, I like their philosophy, Dieter Rams is probably the one for me. I really sort of connect with his design philosophy, less but better. I think it's even on my LinkedIn profile. I think, they're probably the three people that I'd mention in terms of just had a real impact on my career, my design career, technology career.
Yeah, and that's the thing with like mentorship. It doesn't really have to be a super formal relationship. Yeah. It could be, you watch their content on Instagram and they have an impact. Or like it can be something super casual, or it can be, a manager and an employee kind of relationship too. That's great that, a good manager can really have such a massive impact on your career and how you approach problems.
Yeah.
And
Yeah,
that's great. And I love it when people do a little shout out to past managers. Well, and Mikey, I like to finish the podcast on one of my favorite questions.
Yep.
So if you could go and give yourself, younger self, some career advice, what would that be?
Oh, man. I think we'll probably go back to that speed bump conversation that we had, which is just because it's not working doesn't mean it's your fault. People will still like you if the project doesn't meet budget or meet timelines, I think that kind of hindered me a lot in my 20s and is just sort of that kind of thinking. I worked very, very hard and I had a lot of success and things like that, but it came at a big cost. And so I think that's probably what I would say. I'd probably also say don't spend so much money at the pub. Maybe save some, maybe have a house deposit. But I think I enjoyed my time and I traveled around the world and things like that. But it's kind of the flip side. Now I'm older. I'm like, maybe I should have just tried to buy one of these apartments in Redfern when they were super cheap. But
that's 2020, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But I think mostly it's that's when we talked about the speed bump is just because it's not working doesn't mean it's your fault. And don't internalize that dysfunction or that imperfect communication.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one of the most influential things that I've heard is you are not your work.
Yes.
Your job shouldn't define you. And when you hear that when I heard that when I was younger, I was like, oh yeah, it didn't really resonate with me because I didn't really know how that showed up. But it sounds like to me that that's kind of what your advice would be as well, like kind of separate yourself from your achievements or your failures and just do good work and don't go to the pub as much.
Well, still go to the pub, but maybe save some of your money, not
just get three beers instead of four.
yeah just put that into the long-term savings.
Well, on that note, thank you so much for joining us.
No, this is really amazing. I had a really great time. Yeah.
Me too. And I really appreciate your time and for being so open about your experience. I feel like it will land with so many people and potentially help so many people.
Yeah.
So thank you so much again, Mikey.
No worries. All right. Fantastic. It's lovely talking to you.